Afterward, the tempting of conservatism. The past shows unvaryingly that when a people's freedom disappears, it goes not with a bang, but in silence amid the comfort of being cared for. That is the dire peril in the present trend toward statism. If freedom is not found accompanied by a willingness to resist and to reject favors, rather than to give up what is intangible but precarious, it will not long be found at all. Richard Weaver, 1962. In this book, I have argued that modern liberalism is the offspring of 20th century progressivism, which in turn shares intellectual roots with European fascism. I have further argued that fascism was an international movement or happening expressing itself differently in different countries depending on the vagaries of national culture. In Europe, this communitarian impulse expressed itself in political movements that were nationalist, racist, militarist, and expansionist. In the United States, the movement known elsewhere as fascism or Nazism took the form of progressivism, a softer form of totalitarianism that, while still nationalistic and militaristic in its crusading forms and outlook, was more in keeping with American culture. It was, in short, a kind of liberal fascism. After the Holocaust, and in haste after the Kennedy assassination, nationalistic passions were inverted. A punitive liberalism emerged, in James Pearson's words, in which Herbert Croly's promise of American life became the curse of American life. Progressivism's age-old yearning to fix America became a religious crusade to cleanse it, often through self-flagellation, of the nation's myriad sins. In short, liberalism in this country succumbed to the totalitarian temptation, the belief that there is a priesthood of experts capable of redesigning society in a progressive manner. That progressive priesthood brooks no opposition, and it is in the ascendant today on many fronts. So far, so good. However, insofar as this has been a long book that insistently hammers on the danger of allowing these liberal fascist themes and tendencies to percolate unopposed through our politics, economics, and culture, it is perhaps incumbent on me to anticipate a few of the objections that might be raised by even the most well-disposed and open-minded reader. To wit, aren't you overstating the problem, trying to pin the brown shirt on your opponents in the same way you claim they have done to you? Besides, who cares about the origin of these ideas if the way they're being applied is benign and even beneficial? What's so bad about a little progress and pragmatism taken in moderation? And if, as you repeatedly state, there is no real prospect of a fascist coup today, why sound the alarm? More to the point, perhaps, why make so much of the Clintons, Kennedy, FDR, and Wilson, but so little of, say, Nixon and George W. Bush? If one is looking for evidence of incipient fascism in the United States, shouldn't you be more concerned with the Bush administration's fear-mongering, jingoism, and arrogation of executive privilege? Isn't that the real fascist threat today, and not Whole Foods' promotion of organic toilet paper and Hillary Clinton's campaign on behalf of children?